Welcome to Communication Studio, the podcast that helps you build confidence, captivate your audience, and master every presentation, from meetings to the stage. This is Communication Studio.
Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of the Communication Studio podcast with me, Mike Knott. And I have the privilege and honor to welcome our very first guest to the podcast today, and that is the SVP of Solution and Value Consulting for Bazware, the one, the only, Jeffro Elvin. Welcome to the podcast, Jeffro.
Morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So Bazware, firstly, just to cover who you are and what you do, Bazware is an invoice lifecycle management company. So tell me just a couple of bits about that.
Sure. So the focus is really about all invoices everywhere for all of our organizations and customers that we deal with, focusing a lot on full compliance and complete control of the entire invoice lifecycle management process. And doing that, as you'd expect these days, it's all a lot of that's generated or managed through applying AI in an intelligent way. So not just throwing it out there as a buzzword, but actually, you know, making use of the learnings over, it's actually our 40th year this year. So it's Bazware's 40th birthday, which is slightly sad when I'm older than the company I work for. But that's great. But it's using all that learning, that experience over that time to then apply AI intelligently to everything we do. So, and you know, the sorts of organizations we deal with and support, the likes of Mercedes-Benz, DHL, you know, some of the world's largest organizations transacting and sending millions of invoices a year.
Amazing. And one of the things I found with the roles I've done, I've worked in life sciences, which is interesting to a certain extent, but not exciting. I've worked in marketing, which is typically very exciting. And then I've worked in contract lifecycle management, which again, I would say is less exciting. And one of the things I like to focus on with Communication Studio is you need to try and make it exciting. You need to bring it to life. We've known each other for 4 years now, which I've just realized, and is time has flown. It doesn't feel like 4 years ago. And we first met when I was trying to get a job within your team, and we set up a call. It was supposed to be an initial introductory 15-minute or 30-minute call. I can't remember. We were meant to keep it short, and I believe we ran to an hour and a half. So I wanted to start there and get your perspective on how we first met and the things you thought and how communication played a huge part of that initial process at the beginning of our journey.
Yeah, really interesting you say that about the subjects sometimes are not the sexiest things in the world. So you mentioned contract lifecycle management there, and I mentioned invoice lifecycle management. You know, sending bills for payment is not necessarily the most interesting area in the world. So the key thing is to really make sure that we're communicating our value in a clear and concise way to customers. We're understanding what they're trying to achieve. And really a lot of that comes down to storytelling. And then coming back to that 15-minute quick intro before we maybe went on to an interview, which turned into an hour and a half, as you say, the thing that I was really looking to do in that was meet candidates who could tell a story, who would be able to communicate clearly to customers. And the way that we actually did that first meeting was on the telephone, if you remember. It wasn't a Zoom meeting, it wasn't in person. And the reason that I did that was because I really wanted to hear, how does somebody come across when they're talking to somebody that they can't see? They haven't got the other visual cues that you have if you're up on stage, that you have if you're in a Zoom meeting. And being able to hear that. And an hour and a half later, I was clearly hooked because we were still talking, still walking. I think I covered something like 7 or 8 miles during that interview. So that was great. But it was really, what it tells me is a lot about how somebody uses stories to convey themselves, to express the way that they work. And really, it's all about making connection and trust. At the end of the day, that's what it's focusing on. And if I go back to that 4 years, is it really 4 years ago? If I go back to that 4 years ago, I remember lots of little micro stories that you were using during our discussion to explain where you'd been successful, where you'd overcome challenges, where you had maybe been unclear about what you were trying to do. But every single micro story that you had was thoughtful. It wasn't rushed. It wasn't just thrown in there for the sake of it. There was a connect that there was a reason for it to be there. And I think really for me at that time, that built the confidence that I was looking for in somebody, because it meant that if you could do that with me, you could do that with anybody. And it meant that you could do that with any customer. And it was the fact that you weren't just talking and providing stories, you were actually listening, actively listening, asking questions as well, which I think in turn meant that I was then using stories back. So, that's what I remember mainly about that hour and a half original call that we had. Was it really was full and peppered with little micro stories, as I call them.
And I think for me, we underestimate how many stories we tell in a day. Everything is a story to a certain extent. And I've said on a previous episode, a CFO I've worked under lots of CFOs. Some CFOs just read the numbers, and you think, I don't really know what that means. The company's so big, or I'm so distant from it, I don't really understand what that means, or how I have an impact, or how that's going to impact me. So you just sort of switch off. You can't remember that many statistics, then they're meaningless. But if there's a CFO, and I'm picking a CFO because again, they have a very numbers-based, unexciting job, on the to most people. If they can weave those numbers into a meaningful story. Here's what it means to you. Here's why that's happened. Here's how we're correcting that, or here's the good news from that. Suddenly it becomes meaningful to you as an individual, and you're listening. You're taking it in, you're absorbing it, and you can remember it afterwards. And tech solutions in particular can be overwhelming to some people. Trying to explain a concept to somebody who isn't or doesn't consider themselves technical can be very difficult. On the flip side, trying to communicate with somebody who's incredibly technical and level with them without patronizing them or making them feel undermined can be really difficult, can be really challenging. And I think storytelling brings that to life because it can simplify things in a meaningful and relatable way.
Completely agree. I think that skill of being able to take something that's really complex, different technical solutions, and be able to explain it to probably a member of your family that doesn't really understand these things at all is the key. How do you take something that's complex, simplify it, use a story to bring it to life and to really make it interesting for somebody to not only hear and listen to, but that they can repeat it someone else. That's what you're after, is it actually they can explain it to somebody else. I was in a meeting yesterday with a customer, and during that meeting, one of the Solution Value consulting team were going through explaining some concepts. And what came up then was a little story about another customer who had done something similar in the results, like you said earlier about numbers. There were three or four key numbers. And what was interesting was 20 minutes later, somebody else re-entered the room on the customer side and asked a question that had already been answered. And one of the other participants from that customer responded by retelling that story that had been told 20 minutes before. So it had clearly stuck in their mind. So it was brilliant because actually we didn't, all we had to do was nod and confirm the numbers that this person gave back. But so that, again, that just shows sometimes how, having those stories and those pieces in there can really help. But again, for me, I've not come from a technical background. I didn't do computer science or anything like that. I came from being a user of technology and found that actually being able to help train others or to be able to articulate why something was important or how this technology could support somebody's day-to-day role. Quite often through giving examples, that became sort of the key as to how I ultimately ended up in the world of pre-sales. Yeah, I think that's a key thing, a key element.
From meetings to the stage, this is Communication Studio.
And going back to the reiteration of the story in your customer meeting, I think that's so powerful. That really stuck with me straight away. People remember a hook or a story or a quirky detail much more than they'll remember a basic fact. And I actually struggled. So I did do computer science. The area I struggled with was remembering concise definitions of things, because they didn't serve any meaning to me, that I couldn't tie them to something. So I relied solely on my memory. And when it came to that, I wasn't as strong as I was in other areas. So my coursework was always a lot stronger than my actual exam. For that reason, it wasn't my knowledge or my ability to comprehend things. It was being able to tie it to a story. So when we're trying to win over a customer, when we're trying to sell something, or we're even trying to persuade loved ones of that something's a good idea, it's telling facts probably not going to stick or be memorized, especially if somebody's not as passionate about it as you are. But telling it as a story and weaving it in as to how it will be meaningful to them, how it will make a difference, the impact it will have on them. And let's focus on the business world from a business perspective. So this is going to save you time, and here's an example of that. And I've seen it done really badly where you have an ROI slide thrown in at the end of a presentation. So you've got this presentation, you introduce yourself, you give a bit of an overview of the company, you show a demo, and then at the end you go, and you'll get 500% return on this. And they'll go, yeah, you're in sales. Of course I will. And it's not meaningful. It doesn't mean anything. It's not relatable. You haven't woven that into the whole story. So they don't leave remembering that ROI slide. They're probably going to dismiss that and remember other aspects of your demo. So that value piece has just been lost, completely and utterly lost. So weaving it in at the beginning and making that impact will have situations like yours where a customer is then repeating that back to others straight away. You've just got an advocate straight away there. You've got somebody who's really understood what you've delivered. And also, let's imagine you don't care about that. What you will care about is not wasting your time. So if somebody can take what you've said and repeat it and understand it and know it, that's just a massive pat on the back for you. You've done a great job. They actually have listened, absorbed, and been able to repeat what you've said.
Yeah, I think the key thing is, particularly in the business world, is that we're often presenting to buyers and a range of audiences who are looking at a solution. They've come to you with a challenge. They've got something they're trying to overcome, something they're trying to achieve. And they want to understand, not only can your solution technically do those things, but what's it going to bring? What's it going to bring me? What's the value that I'm going to get out of this in the long run? And the problem is that if a customer say, let's say it's a simple process and there's only three competing companies, quite often there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, a buyer is not going to remember every single specification, every single feature that's been presented to them or explained to them, but they will remember a compelling narrative. They are going to remember, you know, that story where you've explained something in a way that gives a connection. I remember an example with a lady who had been who was at an organization, and she'd been using one of our solutions just in a pilot mode at this stage, and it was coming up to a quarterly business review with some senior stakeholders, and she woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning because some messages had come in from her CEO asking for some information out of their contracts that they were going to need. And she was like, oh my God, how am I going to do this? This is going to take me, you know, 4 or 5 hours. The meeting's at midday. It's 5 in the morning. What am I going to do? Oh, I know. I could use that solution that we were trialing and taking a look at. And within 15 minutes, she'd managed to find the information she needed from across 3,000 contracts. And she was back in bed by 6 a.m. and able to get 2 hours of sleep. So she then turned up to that meeting with all the information in her hand, and she felt fresh. And that really stuck in my mind in terms of, it wasn't about the fact that 3,000 contracts could be processed and it takes this many milliseconds to do it, and there's all of this information in there because there's loads of other vendors that could do the same thing. But it was the fact that there was this message that you could then take and use that with other people. And the amounts of times that story, I'd talk about that to other prospects and they'd nod away, going, yeah, I've found myself in exactly the same position. So you've immediately built that connection, that trust. And it doesn't matter about the number of features and specifications that were in there. It's that story, it's that narrative that's connected with somebody personally, and they're thinking, yeah, do you know what? I have those same pain points, but I also really want to be able to overcome those. So this sounds great.
Yeah, and two things stick in my mind with that story. One, it's the emotional connection to something that really makes you listen and remember something. And I think, again, that's something that's overlooked. You don't realize what emotion means. It's not feeling sad or exciting. It's having some sort of relationship with the story that's being told. And a number often doesn't give us that unless we get excited about that number. So you see 50% off something you really want, that gets you excited because you really want it, but you've got that emotional connection to it already. The 50% off something you don't want is meaningless. So the emotion of that story, you can imagine, as you were telling that story, I could imagine waking up at 5 a.m. myself, glancing at my phone, wishing I hadn't seen those messages and thinking, oh my God, the meeting's in a few hours. That anxiety, the butterflies you get, you can't go back to sleep. You're also thinking, if oh my God, I'm going to be so tired later as well. So all of that starts rushing through you. And I was sat here imagining that feeling, being able to put myself in that person's shoes, even though I don't know who you're talking about. You just said there's a lady once, and that's all I knew. And yet I felt that emotion. The second thing you said was you sharing that story, and it could be made up. Nobody knows whether it's true or not, but that doesn't matter. You sharing that story with another customer immediately enables them to relax and say, oh, yeah, I've had that situation as well. So often in a situation, it doesn't matter if we're professional services, customer success, sales, we're trying to get a customer to agree to a pain point. We're trying to get them to agree that something's worked, something's still a problem, the solution is valuable to them. We're trying to get them to agree with that. And I think one of the most powerful ways of doing that is sharing a story like the one you've shared, where they can go, oh, yeah, I've had that situation too. You're not making them admit a vulnerability. You're asking them to share a vulnerability you've just shared. And I've seen that situation. For example, one of the things I do in my main job is talk about repositories and try and say to someone, oh, I bet it's really hard for you to find that, isn't it? They go, no, we're fine, thank you. No, we don't have a problem. No, I'm good at what I do. But if I say, oh, another customer I've worked with, they've got 10 repositories. It takes them ages to search through them. They don't ever know what's in where. And they go, that enables the person you're talking to go, well, we haven't got 10, but we have got 4, and it is a bit of a nightmare. And suddenly you've just taken that pain away from them having to admit to something. And then you've got that pain point nailed. They've agreed to it. And now you can proceed with selling your vision. So you're not even opening up with your software. Hey, my software's amazing. Hey, my solution's amazing. You're opening up with a shared pain point that enables you to then leverage that and say, hey, I can solve that for you with this. Do you want me to show you? And now, of course, they want you to show you them because they've
And
got that pain point.
there are slightly different versions on that as well, because I think about an example, another story for you. Why not share stories? We're talking about stories. I was doing some work with Yorkshire Water some years back, and you mentioned about at the beginning there, and what I did in that particular meeting was it was very complex in terms of the different pain points that they'd already explored or explained to us. It was very complex in terms of the landscape. There were a lot of different stakeholders and lots of different things coming together. And they'd called for this meeting. They wanted a demonstration, wanted to go through everything. And again, it was important for me to create that emotional buy-in, to have empathy and be able to make what we were talking about memorable so they could understand how this would work. It happened that a couple of days before I went to Yorkshire Water, I live in Yorkshire, that there was a Yorkshire Water van parked just down the road from my house. And so went and took a photo of the van, met the driver, Tony, engineer, sorry. And Tony, I sort of explained to him that I'm actually going to your headquarters in a few days' time. I'm talking to them about the problems and the issues with ordering processes and what that means. And the story from Tony, the engineer, was very different to the pieces of paper we'd had with the RFP process and everything else on it that explained things from a high level. So I actually took Tony's story to open that meeting when we went to headquarters. Photo of Tony and his van, the bottom of my driveway, and explained that, there was a problem on our driveway with our water meter. But unfortunately, Tony wasn't able to access the systems online because there was no mobile phone reception in the village we live in. So how was he going to be able to order these pieces? Where was it going to come from? How does he get it? So it was this whole complicated process he was having to go through. He was frustrated. And it meant that he had a long way to go to his next job, and then he'd have to come back again. And so you can soon start to see how this ties into sort of a supply chain type story. But by opening up with that at the beginning, it immediately changed things in the room, in terms of what we were talking about, because they could see that I cared, that we cared as an organization. We were trying to change not just a set of processes that had been outlined in an RFP process, but actually we'd gone to the ground level where things really matter, which was their workers. And I think it was about 6 months later, went back to Yorkshire Water to speak to someone. And the first thing that the project manager said to me was, "How's Tony?" So, 6 months later, they remembered the name of the engineer, of the person that we'd put into that presentation and talked about. So again, it was, for me, that was about creating emotional buy-in. And it's exactly what stories do. Logic drives conclusions, but emotion drives decisions.
Yes, I love
Actually, that
that.
sounds quite good. I should maybe coin that.
Yes.
I like that.
Copyright Jeffrey Elvin. I
But
love
yeah, and I think storytelling, it helps to establish trust. It can build urgency, and you really align with the customer's goals.
Yes, and it all comes back to a story I've shared in another episode of you make decisions emotionally and then you back it up with rationale. So if you go into that meeting with just rationale, there's no emotional connection. And we said at the beginning, some industries, some solutions don't seem exciting or sexy on their own. So that emotion's not there by default. But you can create emotion with stories, like the one of the lady who had to wake up at 5 a.m. And had a solution in place before 6 a.m. And Tony the engineer and what it means to him. It creates that emotion, even though. You and I aren't engineers. We can imagine that frustration. We can also imagine as customers being on your driveway and having that situation going, oh, they're not going to have it fixed till later because he can't get the part. And everyone can imagine that and understand that no matter where you are. So like you say, it takes it from, lifts it off the page of an RFP where it's just a requirement, just a day job, and it makes it real. And creates that emotional connection to it. And I think that's really powerful. There's another story you told me as well. And I think I love this because I've seen these sorts of things before. I've never known anyone who's done this sort of thing. So you are the first person I've known who's done this sort of thing. I think it's very ballsy, but I love it. And it worked in this situation. And that's your Manchester Airport Group story. I don't want to steal your thunder, so I'll let you tell the story.
I like the fact that you can remember it as well. So it obviously came across well in that regard. So yeah, this was maybe 6 years, seven years ago. was doing some work with Manchester Airport Group, and you get through, a process of responding to the needs, and ultimately end up in some sort of proof of concept or demonstration day. And in this case, we had 60 people in the audience. We knew we were one of three vendors that were going through, and there was something stupid like 120 different processes that they wanted to see, scenarios that they wanted to go through. And anyone that's been in sort of the pre-sales world, or even services, or working with customers that ask for that sort of thing, you immediately groan and think, "Oh my good God, how are we going to get through all of this? And this is going to be the most dull day ever, not just for us, but for the audience. And when you've got 60 people to try and manage, you've somehow got to capture their imagination and, using stories or different pieces along the way. So I was presenting up at the front of the room and working through, big screen, explaining some processes and showing you this is what this is what sort of happens in the day to day. And just as I'm getting to a key part in the process, my phone goes off in my pocket, and I turn to the audience and sort of just sheepishly get my phone out and bring it up by my chest, and I answer it. And everyone in the room is looking at me thinking, what on earth is this guy doing? And so I have a conversation on the phone explaining that I'm just in the middle of something really important. I'll get back to them. Yes, I understand that the thing that they're asking for is really important as well, but I'll come back to them as soon as I can. And then I paused and I looked at the room and explained that phone call is exactly what happens to most of you when you're going through your day-to-day life. You're doing things at work and you get interrupted, something more important comes in and you forget what you were doing. But what you need is, a solution that ultimately has remembered the very last thing you were doing and held it there so that you can come back to it at any point in time. So the whole point of that staged phone call is actually an alarm that went off in my pocket.
I was going to ask, did it?
Set an alarm, for a certain time, knowing that we had a very structured day, so that would go off. So that was part of the presentation, was being interrupted by a phone call. But it was the you could sense it in the room, the way that everyone went silent and looked at me, sort of incredulous at the fact that I was answering a phone call in the middle of a presentation with 60 people, until the penny dropped and they started to realize. But again, a bit like I mentioned earlier with 6 months later at Yorkshire Water, similar thing. It was maybe 3, 4 months later. We were back in doing second round of presentations, and one of the project leads, sort of came over and said, "Is your phone on silent today?"
Yeah.
And again, it was just that nice thing that they've remembered. They've connected. It helps having a slightly different name anyway sometimes. But that it's the story, and it was the fact that that thing happened on stage that everybody saw, and that became part of what they remembered. But it wasn't just, oh yeah, that was clever, and we saw that on stage. The message also sunk home, which was, people were coming up afterwards going, "You're absolutely right. That happens all the time. We get pulled away to do different meetings, or something urgent comes in, and we have to go and deal with those things, and it interrupts what we had in our minds we were going to do." So, multiple different levels there with that story. But yeah, like you say, a little bit ballsy, but it was really about trying to be memorable in that example, and again, a type of story that was connecting with the audience in terms of, this is something that people go through every day.
Yeah, I think 3 points for me on that story. One, creating that kind of element in a, like you say, a very structured day. So how do you stand out from the other vendors? Because they're going to be coming in saying, our software's the best, our software's the best, our software's the best. How do you stand out? So you obviously have your product and you can rely on that to a certain extent. But then it's all about how you present. And I try to say this to people all the time. So it's not just being enthusiastic, which of course you should be. You should have good visual aids, yes. But also you need to make it come to life. And that's exactly what you did there. 60 people in the room. You're there. You're thinking this is going to be a really tough 3 days. They're probably thinking the same thing. They've got to watch this 3 times and see the same solutions. They're probably not the most thrilled audience to be there anyway. Some will be there reluctantly. So how do you make it engaging? How do you make it enjoyable for them? So by doing that kind of thing, it makes it entertaining. It brings them out of any kind of slumber they might have fallen into, which is always possible if you have 3 days of demos, no matter who you are. And that level of engagement for me really stands out. Adding a bit of humor in, adding a little skit in like you did, breaking out. It's so important to keeping people engaged. And then, like you say, a few months later, they can remember your presentation, not just that component of it, but that component is the hook that sticks everything else together. The second is, as you called out as well, making it real life. It's not, this isn't just a solution. This is their job. This is their daily lives. So making it as realistic as possible is so important. I think the less somebody has to imagine using your software, the better. The more it just seems like, oh, I wish we had this. And I've got a story similar to this. So I was positioning a Teams integrations in Microsoft Teams. It's not exciting. Teams is something they have to use. People don't mind using it. It's okay, but you don't go home going, oh, I've just loved my day with Teams. Nobody says that, and nobody thinks that about Zoom either. They're just good tools that we have to use for our daily jobs. So an integration with Teams makes your life a little bit easier, but it's not exciting. Now, I had the additional challenge of the existing solution they had an integration with Teams. So I was fighting with parity. That's even less exciting. Like, oh, we can do what your other tool does. Why would they possibly move to ours if all I can offer is parity? So I brought it to life in the same ways you did with your story. So I coaxed a colleague colleague Laura in, you also know Laura, and it was in our office. So I decided to make it a bit of a theatrical performance. And what I did was I imagined I was a magician. That was the way I like approached it. So I had Laura come up to the glass wall of the meeting room and wave. So I sent her a little message before and said, now, now, now. And then she came over and I said, oh, this is Laura. She's going to be helping me out on this section. And she waved. So then she's real. They've seen her and they're like, oh, what's coming next? What's coming next? There's anticipation. Then she goes into a little meeting room next door and I put my screen up on the screen in the meeting room and I called her on Teams live. And she answered, they'd just seen her, seen what she was wearing. They knew this wasn't fake. It was all very live. And then I acted very seriously in role play, acting as a member of that company. This was a bank. So I acted as a member of the bank, performing a video banking call via Teams. Now it's very real. And I didn't know their scripts, but you know, you can guess the sorts of things they might say. And Laura acted very well as the customer. And we went through that process and it was just 3 or 4 minutes, really simple. And then we ended it, but we did it really seriously and they saw everything on the screen end to end. And at the end, our main stakeholder room pointed at the screen and he went, we need that now. And I was sat there in my head going, you've got it already. But
Yeah.
it wasn't that. It wasn't the solution. It was bringing it to life of how it can make a difference to that bank and to that customer. Engagement, the real life approach to it, and it just make it come alive. And they went to that incumbent a week after, and I obviously have no idea what happened in there, but I know they didn't do the same thing, and we ultimately won that process. So even when you're in a situation where all your solution could do is the same another solution could do, you can still bring it to life. You can still make it engaging in the same way you did in Manchester and the same way I did as well with the bank. And I think that can make a huge difference.
And I think the some of that's around the different cues and the different ways that you tell a story as well. There's a gentleman, he actually is ex-Coronation Street actor, Lawrence Mullin, and he conducted some training when I was back at SAP, however many years ago that was, maybe 10, 12 years ago, and I actually had him and a colleague back for our team 18 months ago at Basware. And his whole kind of thing is around the audience, the message, and you. So they're the three components of how do you communicate something well, whether it's remotely, or whether it's on stage. And the example or the piece from 12 years ago was he told this story about a child who had a bedroom and had a goldfish, and unfortunately this goldfish passed away. So, right, okay, great. That's the story. Then he told it again in a very different way, which was, little Johnny, he's this tall. He's walked into his room. He's got stickers all over the wall on his right-hand side. He's got his bed with his He-Man coverings over the top of it, bookcase just above the bed, and in the distance is the window with the sunlight pouring through. And he had this goldfish that he'd loved for years. And unfortunately, the cat got hold of the goldfish and it passed away. Johnny didn't know what to do, so he took one of the books from above his bed on the left-hand side, just above where his pillow is, and he hid the goldfish behind this book. And when I met Lawrence again, 12 years after that, his first thing he said to me, he said, "What was the story?" And I said, "It was the goldfish up behind the book on the left-hand side above Johnny's bed." He went, "Ah, right, okay." He said, "Now I know which cohort you were." And it was the power of showing the different ways of telling the same story. One which is just very flat, here's how it is, and the other is putting descriptors in, bringing it to life, making it so that it really becomes memorable. So that's important as well, not just telling a story that is, here's somebody walking down the street and they go from A to B. It's like, they're walking down this street that's it's cobbled and actually really quite difficult to make your way, and it's got trees where the bits of the pavement are coming up on the sides, and the bit of a trip hazard, and you tell a story in a very different way when you give those descriptors. So I think that's also a powerful thing to think about. And your team's example, I love that. That's great. And a lot of that will be around those other cues that you were giving. So the fact that you saw the person, the fact that you could probably hear the person slightly through the wall next door, up on the screen. So I think all of that becomes, an integral part of your storytelling. It's not always like this, voice only.
Level up your presentation game with Communication Studio.
Jeffro, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure, and it's just felt like we've had a conversation, to be honest. I think most of our conversations end up like this, but it's been an absolute pleasure, hopefully for you too. And I think back to that first interview I had, and I personally feel very lucky because not only did I get to work for you and have a great trajectory, can't get that word out, for my career, but also we've been able to then come back and do this today as well, which is amazing. So wanted to thank you from my side. Any final thoughts from you on everything we've discussed today, and how communication and storytelling in particular we focused on today makes such a difference in our professional lives?
Firstly, thank you as well. Great to come on. First time I've done this sort of format, so this is good fun too. I think back to that first interview, right back at the beginning that we talked about. We planned for 15 to 30 minutes. It became an hour and a half. It wasn't face to face or over video. It was literally just our voices. But it would not have been that easy of a conversation if it wasn't for the fact that our communication from both sides, I was trying to, sell you on a journey as well, and the potential of the role, and your passion that came across in that about what you cared about and were looking for in a role, that helped to build trust. You actually referred to the, sort of the three elements the other week in one of the podcasts that I was listening to when I was out on one of my walks I tend to do. So it's kind of key in many ways, and I actually took the idea of doing an interview only using voice from spending time during doing walks and talks, as I called them, during COVID with my team. And the key thing about that is that when you're voice only and you're away from your desk, away from your computer and your distractions of your phone bleeping and everything else, you concentrate much more on the voice and on what's around you. And I think that helps you to instantly connect. You start describing what you're seeing, what's around you, what you're hearing. You're hearing the gravel under somebody's foot, the leaves that are crunching. I think that's very different. So the medium of communication, whether it's voice only, whether it's over Zoom, Teams, whether it's in person, you've got to alter slightly what you do. The end goal of all of those methods is you're looking to build trust. That's the most important thing for me. So, clearly that worked 4 years ago when we met. So keep on doing the great things, loving this the podcast format and what you're doing. And I hope that other people have found this conversation useful.
Jeffro, once again, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for tuning in to Communication Studio. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave us a review. Join us next time as we unlock more secrets to presenting with confidence. Communication Studio, your guide to presentation success.